Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
This is Abe Thompson with the New Cyber Frontier. Today's guest is the Vice President of Stroz Friedberg. His name is Brian Hurd, but most importantly to me, he's a former Navy guy. So special love goes out to my fellow Navy brothers. I know Chris would be happy, but Brian, it's great to have you on the program.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So, Brian, you've had a diverse, kind of unique story, unique path. Of course, it started in the most superior of all places, and that's in the Navy. So tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are and kind of developed your zeal and your passion for our industry.
Gotcha. My road in cybersecurity started, geez, when I was 12 years old. I found out about what was known as the Navy Sea Cadet Corps. It's like the Cub Scouts with Navy uniforms.
For those
who aren't familiar. And that led me on a path to want to go to the U.S. Naval Academy, and a lot of hard work through the high school years. But at the academy, studied international relations, a couple other topics, used computers on and off. And this is, for those a little younger, before the web existed in 93 when I graduated and went to NCIS, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service. Yeah. Yes, the TV show.
Woo-hoo!
And yeah, exactly. And as you're told, unlike on the TV show, we weren't that thin, we weren't that cute, and we can't solve crime in 42 minutes when you take all the commercials out.
Well, could you rap, though, like LL Cool J?
No, but apparently I'm told by two of my friends who are advisors on the show that a couple of the antics of the characters are based on some of the things I had done.
Awesome.
I'd ask, do I get royalties for that? And he goes, no, but I do.
Wow. Oh, that's funny. So continue. Sorry.
This is when I arrived at NCIS, I started out in the terrorism center and started to see the ARPANET, DARPANET being an issue where information was readily available or would be as the web started to come online in discussions, even in 93.
Right at the front edge.
Yeah, and it would be a threat not only for espionage and information collection, but also operational security and other things as more and more information about Navy units and capabilities and personnel were available in the network and then on what would be ultimately the World Wide Web. So we founded, when I asked around to see who's in charge of the program, the answer became me. And as a
don't you know better?
Navy founded it.
Yeah, I was going to say you should have known better being in the Navy. Never again volunteer yourself.
Yes.
Okay. And so kind of got that off the ground. And then what was sort of the next step?
The program, thanks to the directors of NCIS and many of the agents, really took off. We actually integrated CIA and FBI personnel into our training program, which took a lot of desire and zeal for the mission. And it was a long discussion about them being read into our programs. But there was no other answer than this is good for the mission. From there, I went over to U.S. European Command and founded their IO cell and worked operations to bring war criminals to justice in The Hague, which was very rewarding as well.
Love it. Well, it's kind of what we live for even now to shut down, you know, these nefarious characters using the networks. Now, in that interface that you had with those other agencies, I presume they used your posse comitatus sort of status and the law enforcement authority that NCIS had, given that they're, you know, DOD entities. How did that work?
It was interesting because back in the, and again, I hate to call back too far, but we'll get to more.
Yeah, I was there with you.
Current topics. Where for our operations on wiretaps, we were using laws from the 1930s.
So we had.
They had not been updated yet.
Yeah.
And many times in working with other law enforcement, we had our our authorities under NCIS and 12333, the U.S. persons, and 5241R, DOD regulation about collection of U.S. persons.
Sure.
So we were able to do both effectively, but there were very tight controls and oversight for law enforcement and for intelligence.
Well, and you know, it was good to hear there was some cross-pollinization even that early. I remember going down when I was at Fort Meade to work with the FBI and trying to define what cyber law and cyber crimes were, you know.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's a story that I resonate with. So how did that set you up for the next step?
Interesting was that I went over to U.S. European Command to help the rest of the Department of Defense, and we founded what was known as the first Information Operations Cell in 1996. It was then replicated to other combatant commands. I came back and went back to NCIS as a civilian for the Navy and then continued to develop the program. Sure. And continued to work with not only the government sector, but we worked with the major banks that served Department of Defense on huge identity theft issues we were finding and other cases across the espionage, fraud, and crime arenas.
Sure. Well, let's take a quick break and go hear from our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
This is Abe Thompson with the new Cyber Frontier. We have as our guest Mr. Brian Hurd, the Vice President of Stroz Friedberg, and a former NCIS guy. We were kind of talking about your impact in developing this IO cell. How did it end up being such a jewel in the crown?
I think because we were so open about helping others, and that has been a theme of the entire arc of my career through NCIS, founding EDS's program, now HP, and then working to found and improve the U.S. watch listing, where I ultimately was the chief of innovation for the entire U.S. watch listing system. It was putting, as many of us do, and as many of you in the cybersecurity community do, that service above self.
Yeah.
We work long hours, we miss soccer games, we miss birthdays, because we're either doing it for a national mission or to protect the company that we've chosen to align with.
Yeah, and that's why I think there's such a draw for so many of us in cybersecurity, obviously, because it's a continuation, really, of the same ethos. Defend those that need help or can't help themselves. And you know, even though we get paid nicely now compared to our military paychecks, right? There's still that sense of duty.
Absolutely, and a sense of mission as I took over to be Microsoft's first intelligence chief for the company, for the digital crimes unit. It was literally a mission to protect the world. And it's an amazing group that does global takedowns and other things of the malware, and we actually used legal innovation, if there is such a term, to sue the adversary and actually get the IP addresses given to us as a seized property of the court.
Wow.
It was a very, very innovative approach and a great team.
So was there integration with LE entities or was it just a pass-through of data to law enforcement authorities? How active could you be?
That's a very interesting dichotomy, and especially as those of you those people who come into the community out of law enforcement and then into cyber, you can interact a lot with law enforcement, but especially as a major global corporation with 90%+ of the world's operating systems, you have to be very cognizant of the privacy and freedoms in each and every country. So it changes the calculus from being Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, Army, and protecting one country.
Yeah.
Needing to be a global citizen as a company.
Yeah, interesting.
It's a lot more complex.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only imagine. And so what a sort of innovative idea anyway to be a part of. I'm glad to hear that was going on. And so you ended up after that in the CISO world.
Yes, I've done a lot of CISO work, board advisory, boards of advisors, boards of directors. And now I'm working, I did a startup with Mudge Zatko from way back in our early days as well. Peter Zatko, who was one of the first ever black hat hackers that went legit. Mm. And then ultimately ran DARPA's programs. And he's a quite a hero of mine and a friend, along with Kevin Mandia and others that worked with us way back in the early days.
Fantastic. What were you doing? I saw the Marshall Center too. That was really interesting to me. Is that Garmisch, right?
Yes. Twice a year, I fly over to Garmisch, Germany to be the cyber keynote to 80 different nations.
Nice. Like global citizen.
Representatives.
Yeah.
Chiefs of police, heads of military, parliamentary members to talk about how they build national cybercrime programs and fight international organized cybercrime.
Excellent. I'm really jealous. I love Garmisch. Great place to be. And
it's
so
one of my favorite places on the planet. I will miss it for the near term as we
I know. I miss anywhere right now. So kind of fast forward to today. What is Strauss Friedberg's focus? What keeps you busy?
So for those who are not familiar with Strauss Friedberg, it's one of the preeminent risk management and response companies on the planet. A couple examples, and only because they were in the press and our clients put them there, can I even mention them? We are the firm that Facebook hired to investigate Cambridge Analytica.
Oh, wow.
We are the firm that Mark Zuckerberg used when his college roommate claimed to have a Word document claiming half of Facebook, and we diagnosed it a forgery forensically.
Wow.
And other cases that are front page news. We've been on every breach you probably read about.
Sure.
We've quietly been there.
That's amazing. You know, I when you talk about risk management, some of the pieces that I envision and kind of help us define this, in addition to, of course, the very strong technical cyber side, but I would imagine legal component, law enforcement and the law, and then insurance, is that a component? And how do you interface? Because this cyber insurance thing is newer to some folks, but it's a real component.
So the Strauss Friedberg was purchased before I arrived there. And one of the reasons I took the job was for this reason, is it was purchased by Aon, the international insurance brokerage company.
There you go.
Aon sits above the traditional, in the market, sits above the traditional AIG, Chubb, and others, great companies.
Sure.
And we broker insurance. We don't sell it. We help people find it.
Yeah, yeah.
They bought Strauss Friedberg to increase and deepen their ability to help clients before, during, and after an event.
Yeah.
And the short version about insurance is cyber insurance. 5 years ago, nobody had it. Five years from now, nobody won't.
Yeah.
And just like steam engines 100 years ago or seatbelts 50 years ago, the insurance companies are gonna be the ones that tell you what technologies statistically reduce events and reduce their impact. And they will be the ones that do drive a great deal of reference architecture in the next 5 to 10 years, where if you want cheaper insurance, you're going to have to use products that have proven themselves with statistics, not with marketing.
And explain to stakeholders why you weren't wearing your seatbelt, you know.
Exactly, or why you picked to knit your own.
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
And as we get into the next generation for CISOs, the CISO is going to have to talk a lot more to the chief risk officer and the general counsel about what the insurance company's assessment said about their architecture proposal.
Well, of course, and I have no problem with that, because that further pushes us to integrate rather than the stovepipe, you know, just behind that door where the guy always says no. We're part of every facet of the organization, whatever it is. Interesting. So, has the platform that Strauss Friedberg provided you something different in terms of experience than you've had before? A different type of access?
Absolutely. And I've had a very fortunate career to work with some of the world's best teams. Mm. And on this one, I get to work with Ed Strauss and Eric Friedberg on a regular basis. Wow. And I probably, from my time in the Navy, I'm called upon for intractable or large problems. I personally ran three of the top 10 largest breaches our company handled last year, as well as I train others on how to manage projects of that scope and scale.
Sure. Do you get a lot of opportunity to bring proteges in with you and when you talk about training, or is it more of a organized training program?
Both. For our core groups, DFIR, Digital Forensics Incident Response, our Gotham Digital Sciences, a bunch of pen testers who just are world class and fun to watch, as well as our advisory and then our dark web intel, there are formal training programs. However, I call on a couple of the calls to action during this is I call on every cybersecurity person to be mentoring at least 2 to 3 people below you.
Darn tootin'.
And make sure you're reaching up to be mentored by 2 or 3 above you, because we all got a little shining to do.
And it's a two-way street. You know, when you talk about going up, especially, it's not always just incumbent on the senior person or it's incumbent on you to pursue them. That's why I'm always motivated and inspired when a young officer or someone will come to me to allow me to pour into them. And I'm looking forward to them to pour into me, especially the energy they have, in that same way. Let's take a quick sponsor break. And then I want to kind of ask you about who you're looking for out there to staff up some of these efforts. So let's go and hear from our sponsor.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
This is Abe Thompson with the new Cyber Frontier. Our special guest is the Vice President of Straws Friedberg, Mr. Brian Hurd. Brian, this is exciting. So, you're talking about some of the great work you're doing, and then even emphasizing something I strongly believe in, that's the bringing along protégés and training as you go and bringing folks into the mix. What types of folks are showing up, and who are you out there looking for to get some of this work done?
Well, as an example, depending on the diversity of cases we work, so I've worked business email compromises and invoice scams from a couple hundred thousand up to tens of millions of dollars. In one of the breaches I ran last year, we deployed a team of 30 people, including having war rooms simultaneously to handle the breach in California and Israel, going 12 on, 12 off across the globe in a follow the sun methodology.
Sure.
One of the things I'm looking for is diversity of thought, of experience, of background. People from different cultures, walks of life, genders, religions, because I'm looking for thought diversity.
Yeah. Probably.
And you just don't get it if everybody came out of the same, used to work at FBI, used to work in the military.
Yeah.
We have to seek out different ways, especially in investigations, especially in handling major complex operations that require hundreds of people across a globe to interoperate, different ways of thinking.
Sure. Well, and cyber, as we say, is a human problem. So we darn well better look like, in some ways, the diversity of our adversaries.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to think, one of the classes we teach when I was doing cybersecurity education was criminal psychology was one of the topics, ideology and criminal psychology. How do they think? What is the process they go through? Because you need to walk through it backwards, to do this forensically. So, do you, especially at the VP level, do you still get to get in the mix and roll up your sleeves as you like?
Yes. And I'll say that in a way is yes, unfortunately, sometimes. For the breach team of leading the team of 30 plus around the world, I thought I was just going to go down there for a week, get some things in order, ended up spending a month and a half or more, actually about 2 months, leading the team, working about 17 hour days. A client needed us.
Right.
I also find myself working more hours now than I did when I was in the junior ranks, although I've been in the executive ranks for far too long now.
Sure.
But yes, I still find myself in a collaborative way, not micromanaging, but in a way to improve products or harden our analytics, tearing open the spreadsheets, doing my own cross checks once in a while. But the other thing I've learned over the years is to allow those experts coming up through the ranks, the people that have new ways of thinking, to have their ability to publish their reports.
Sure.
And to discuss with them in a collaborative way. But at the end of the day, if you're the person that's going to be on the stand testifying, it's your report and you have to be the one that believes in the pie chart.
Sure. So, you know, there is, there's often a concern that the folks at the top, that the folks at the top have this intransigence toward these things. They're not as involved. They may not even understand, or they're poo-poo some of these things. As you kind of sit at the senior ranks, how are we most effectively getting through to them on the seriousness of having a good cyber strategy?
So I can, this is my second call to action on our discussion today.
Excellent.
It comes down to three words: level it up.
Yeah.
It is not their job to come down the ladder and understand how a firewall works or what a C2 means.
Bingo.
It is our job to speak in terms of enterprise risk, mm-hmm, for the chief financial officer, for the
general manager,
for the CEO. Yeah. The CEO of Brinks probably doesn't fix the engines nor care which version of the engine is in the trucks.
Right.
They shouldn't also be forced to learn what firewalls are in place, because I don't think I've ever been, and I've been in way too many board meetings, I've ever asked a CFO what database the financial report came out of. And yet, for some reason, the members of our community, and we must take this upon ourselves, we feel desire to teach people things they really don't have to know, not because they're ignorant or not because they're reticent.
Puff ourselves up.
The enterprise needs the general to be thinking about. They don't need to think about trucks and foxholes. They need to be thinking about the war, the business.
Strategy, yeah. And we better be able to articulate the principles that are relevant to our discipline and to the work that we've done in terms that, you know, talk about bottom line and return on investment and and so forth. And
if we can't articulate either the investments we want in terms of their reduction, the reasonable reduction of risk, there is no zero.
Sure.
Or the investments in the terms of enabling the business at the same time as hardening it, not just securing it, enabling and hardening.
Right.
Those are the things, and also during an event, what's important and what's not? What needs to be fixed first? What needs to be recovered first?
Yeah.
If we can't speak those terms in crisis at the board level, then for those on this, for those who are listening to this who aren't cyber executives, I'll use that phrase in advance. Next time somebody in the boardroom is doing that, you turn to them and say, I'm sorry, if you can't level this discussion up to the enterprise business level, we'll need to find somebody who can.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just had an interesting discussion with someone who'd actually worked as the cyber chief during the Obama administration. One of the positions that's absent really at that table is the IT guru. You know, or the cyber guru, I guess, in this case. And so it's interesting, because you'd get turned around if you couldn't bring it to the level of that person at the head of the table. You're going to get turned around. I've seen that happen a million times when people are in the weeds, admirals and generals, they don't have time for that. I don't know that the civilian world has duplicated that aggressive need yet, but maybe they should, right?
One of the best compliments I've ever gotten in my life was from a director of NCIS, one that was far after my time, but had risen up and then said that after seeing me brief a Secretary of the Navy in the early 90s, he had taken his cyber team over during major events in the Navy during his tenure as director, and, you know, to brief the Secretary of the Navy. He thought it would go just as easy as the one he did. He was calling me and told me this story, and he goes, "They were horrible. Our guys kept trying to talk the wrong things. The second half go, where's the guy from 10 years ago?" And I have a whole new appreciation for your ability to speak English to English and translate these things for executives and global leaders.
Thanks for ruining it for everybody else.
Exactly. There are many people who are developing that skill. Mm-hmm. There are people who are talking about it that haven't truly developed it yet. And I think that's one of the areas as an overall community that I find myself doing a great deal of advisory at the national level and international level and to Fortune 100 corporations about how to structure that discussion. So it's a mission discussion, not a technology one. And I think that's one of the skills that we continue to need to develop. And sure. I that's why I think this venues like this are amazing. And thank you for this opportunity.
And I love being a part of this, and that's exactly it. You know, I love when I have an evangelist, as we call it for cybersecurity, but an articulate, passionate, envisioned evangelist too, to kind of hit some of these points. So, as we look at sort of the discipline that you're in now, and you're building these responses to breaches, and you're working at a very high level. What are you expecting to see near term as you kind of peer into the future a bit?
So some of the things that are very interesting, and these will be things that people can take hopefully from this discussion and implement for little or no money at all, no matter who they call.
Sure.
One of the things I'm seeing is that the things that cause the problems we have today have not changed much since the things that caused the problems when we started the community 20, 30 years ago.
Sure.
The current environment, the pandemic environment, has separated our people, has made them concerned. They'll click on things because they're worried about their jobs, their healthcare, or other things. So while the phishing uses that theme, they haven't gotten any better. They've just picked a topic that scares us more and gets us to click through.
Agile.
The criminals are always picking a new topic. They've done it every time since the Roman days through social engineering.
So the strategy is no different.
Right. The Trojan horse approach, be an email or otherwise, has not changed at all. Just the burst transmission radios we use do. And that's one of the things, and that goes back to, I think you made an amazingly great point. It is the psychology we need to address. And here's one thing where I'll also push back on our community. While training of users and click-through is a problem, the solution actually is not training the users. It's hardening the endpoints.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. Well, don't open attachments unless you're a recruiter that gets resumes every day or a processing department for invoices in the thousands. That is not an option depending on your role in the enterprise. So the solution to make users spend 3 minutes in email trying to divulge which email addresses or which links and hoverovers and all that kind of stuff. I've seen a lot of great innovation in bringing that informed reading forward and color coding and warnings. Yep. That's great, but we're relying on the users and we haven't engineered their backstop very well. And I think that is a thing we need to focus much more attention on.
Yet it's almost as if you've just kind of hit us at a point. It's almost like we just got a gut punch from a fellow professional, which I hope we did. We've foisted some of the responsibility onto the customers, really, the users of the customers too, in terms of a setting a security culture. And so to say that it's on them to do my work, to figure it all out is one thing. Now to say, be aware, help us, but we're going to do everything we can to, like you said, harden the target. I think we need to hear that.
To identify counterfeit bills. Yeah. I can tell when it's written in crayon, but if a really good organized crime division prints out $100 bills, there's no way as an average user of $100 bills or $10 bills or whatever, that I can be diagnosing counterfeits.
Sure.
Yet we're expecting that same level of
true
email detection.
Wow, you better stop. Someone's going to be offended. And
all of the teams in the enterprise, whose job is not to dissect emails, it is to do things we can't do. It's cyber
job.
Here, a space shuttle. It's to process bills. It's to do things we do or don't want to do because
that's the expertise. Yeah, love it, Brian. Oh. Well, Brian, it's been a delight to have you with us on the program. I just appreciate your vision and just your pretty stern admonition to all of us. To stick with doing our job. Obviously, ladies and gentlemen, we've been very blessed to have, an eminent former member of the United States Navy, so that's the best part. But Brian, thanks for joining us.
thank you very much. And thanks for this opportunity to have a great chat and talk to the community.
Indeed. Keep preaching the word, as they say. Well, my name is Abe Thompson. This is the new Cyber Frontier. Good day.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert, just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.